Clones, midweek. Quick question for you. How can you beat great healthy food that you can order from a super easy to use app? Answer is, you can't. How would you like to shop for organic groceries without paying top dollar? You can bypass those overpriced local markets and shop at Thrive Market, a revolutionary online marketplace on a mission to make healthy living easy and affordable to everyone. Great, great idea. Thrive Market is stocked with thousands of the best-selling non-GMO foods and natural products, always at 25 to 50% below traditional retail prices. Listen up. You're going to want to stock up the pantry with Thrive Market because nobody wants to make market runs during all these playoff games. Thrive Market's prices are already up to 50% off, and now they're giving you an extra $60 in free groceries plus free shipping. Get $60 off free organic groceries plus free shipping and a 30-day trial. Go to thrivemarket.com/Rome. That's thrivemarket.com/Rome. Great product. Do that right now.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Lots to get to. I actually want to start, though, this morning with the news involving Tom Brady. ESPN's Adam Schefter says that Tom Brady has not committed to playing in 2018. I repeat, Tom Brady has not committed to playing for the Patriots this season. But that is some freaking molten lava right there. Tom Brady has not committed to playing this season, according to Adam Schefter. Lava. Or at least it would be if he did not chase it 1 second later by saying that the organization fully expects him to play. It's just that he hasn't committed officially to it, but they fully expect him to play. So that's a thing. That's the story. Look, if your goal is to get us to click and your goal is to get us to look at you, I guess it worked. In fact, I might even play along. All right. Tom Brady might not play this season. Tom Brady is not committed to playing this season. What if he doesn't? What if he doesn't play this season? Even though you know he will, but what if he doesn't? All right. If he doesn't, the only thing worse than getting worked by John Lynch and the Niners in that deal for Jimmy Garoppolo, because you were so convinced that your Hall of Fame quarterback would play another 5 years, would be to have your Hall of Fame quarterback just up and quit not long after that terrible trade, leaving you without either player. And the only thing worse than that would be your Hall of Famer quitting because he's sick of the head coach and the fact that he hates the trainer who helped that Hall of Famer continue to play at the highest level even into his 40s. And then worst of all, the thing that may be driving arguably the greatest player ever away from the game before he wants to go is the thing that allegedly made this dynasty in the first place, namely the Patriot way. So if this is a story, if it's a story that's to be believed, that Brady could bolt, and it's not because he can no longer play the game at a high level, it's not because he lost his will to prepare, it's not because of injury, but because he's sick of Belichick and the Patriot way, and that he might not be the only one either, so is Rob Gronkowski, who reportedly is not coming for the offseason workout program or has not yet. So if Brady quits, and it says here he won't, but if he does, and it won't be because he lost his fire for it or wants to spend more time with his family, but because he's sick of Belichick and sick of Belichick fighting with his personal guru, Alex Guerrero, then what does that tell you? I mean, one thing to get worked in a trade involving your quarterback of the future, quite another to run your Hall of Fame quarterback off by making him start to hate the game that has run his entire life. In other words, that window is closing awfully quickly for the Patriots if it hasn't slammed already. Belichick, generally thought of as the best to ever do it. Yeah, maybe, but we're going to find out how good this guy really is if and when he's got to go to battle without Tom Brady. And if he doesn't lighten up, that's going to be sooner than later. If he's got two of his best players who don't want to play, and the old man is the reason for that, then the old man better look in the mirror and readjust his approach and thinking about the so-called Patriot way. And by the way, it's not the Patriot way, it's the Belichick way. His way or the highway. And if he doesn't readjust that, he's about to get burned. Allegedly. I guess what I'm getting at is this. I don't know that this is a thing. I don't know if this is a story, but I do know this. All good things come to an end. But you want that dynasty to die of natural causes. You don't want the hood to kill it himself. And if Belichick doesn't change, that's what's going to happen. Look, if Brady wants to do a bunch of funky stretches, have Alex rub lotion all over him, and eat avocado ice cream, let the guy do it. Look at the guy. It works. And if he's got teammates who make a similar commitment and it works for them, let them do it too. Or risk losing these guys altogether and busting a cap in that dynasty once and for all. So is it a thing? Is it a story? Or is it a way to get us to look at you and click? Who knows? 1-800-636-8686. Where do you come out on this? I do know this. There's obviously frustration there. There's obviously frustration if Brady and Gronk are at odds with the coach. And Hoodie, for who? For what? Because you don't like their trainer? A guy who might be unorthodox? A guy who might be quackish? But a guy who's having success with your best players? Maybe you let them do it. It's just a little lotion. It's just a massage. It's just avocado ice cream. Look at the guy's 40, and he's your MVP. Pats fans, what do you make of this whole thing? Do you really think that Brady would walk away right now because he's at odds with Belichick? I don't know that he would, but I think it's pretty clear he doesn't like his job nearly as much as he used to. Hey, Hood, at some point the guy's not going to want to prepare. At some point the guy's not going to have the game to do it anymore. But at this point, he has both those things. Don't rip the guy's love of the game from him.
Oh, my way or the highway.
Again, I don't think it's the Patriot way, it's the Belichick way. For Sports Illustrated, Lee Jenkins. You did a feature, Lee, on Ben Simmons, essentially 2 months into his first NBA season. So go back and give me your mindset at that time. What did you make of him at that point of the season?
Well, it's just so unusual. I mean, you have all of these oversized ball handlers now who are sort of, you know, made into point guards, but I think he's probably the most natural of them. You know, when you talk about like Giannis and sort of those 6'11 guys who can suddenly take the ball down the court and make plays. But I think he's more natural. He seemed to me like so many players grew up they came out of the Michael Jordan era, came out of the Kobe Bryant era. To me, he's the first real star who was hatched from the LeBron era, who plays in some ways like LeBron James plays. Obviously not as forceful physically maybe, but when you think about the vision and the ability to make teammates better and pass the ball, so much of that I think came from LeBron. And also there's a uniqueness to a guy who, you know, really can't shoot from outside at all and is still able to put his imprint on the game the way Simmons does. So, you know, all of those things kind of made him intriguing. And then you add to the fact that Brett Brown really took that year when Simmons was hurt in Philadelphia and viewed it as a training ground to build a point guard, because I don't think they weren't going to do that originally. When they drafted him, they were going to play him in more of a point forward role. And that year really gave them an opportunity to revisit their thinking.
And, of course, Brett Brown was the one guy who saw that, Lee. Nobody else saw it. Everybody thought he was crazy when he put that down. But he saw that in him, and it's been great so far. Now, you've got a great piece up on SI.com right now about the LA Lakers, who, despite the fact, Lee, they're not in the playoffs, they are one of the biggest stories in the league because they've got those two max salary spots, they've got some great young talent, and they've got a key figure in Rob Pelinka, who you describe as a, quote, John Hughes character come to life. For those who have not spent any time with him, what's Pelinka like?
Well, he had a life of sort of incredible proximity to talent. You know, I wrote about when he was in high school, he was already playing against Michael Jordan in the Chicago Summer Leagues. They called it the Schlitz Malt Liquor Summer League. So, I mean, he was playing with pros, with great pros, when he was just a high school kid in Chicago. He's from the, you know, one of the North Shore suburbs, and went to Michigan, gets there, wins a national championship right away with Glenn Rice and Ramil Robinson. A couple years go by, and then the Fab Five comes. So this guy's life was really marked at a young age by incredible talent kind of flocking around him, purely probably by coincidence. Then he becomes an agent, represents Kobe Bryant almost right off the bat, 2 years after he became an agent. Ended up having Durant for a short time, of course, James Harden. So I think he does have some access into the minds of players and really superstars. Lakers made him their GM of course, last year at Magic Johnson, the president. Neither of them had really any experience at all running a team. And, you know, when you look at what they've done, they've successfully cleared cap space, and they have these young players. And I don't know that they get the credit for bringing in all those young players. The Lakers have a really good scouting department, and they've done a good job in the draft. And I think that probably gets swept under. Everybody talked about the free agent misses, you know, everybody they didn't get. But in that time, they did pretty well in the draft. They didn't do perfectly. Obviously, you would have rather Porzingis over D'Angelo Russell, but a lot of those picks have turned out to be fairly valuable assets where the Lakers can now tell a free agent, you know, we're not just selling LA. We're not just selling the banners. There are young players here. Now, what you think of those young players, if you think they are enough to go get somebody like Kawhi Leonard or enough to be a lure for Paul George and LeBron James, those are interesting questions because it's not as though those guys are looking like the next coming of Kevin Durant, but they do look solid, right? And I think projecting that into the future is a trick for anybody who's considering LA.
The Daily Jungle today brought to you by Fan Exchange. Are you thinking about buying tickets to your favorite sports, concert, or theater event? We're coming up on the weekend. Lots of good things going on. Maybe you want to experience a basketball game courtside rather than on your couch. Seriously, who does not want to go catch playoff hockey live in person? Then head on over to FanExchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on FanExchange are always guaranteed, and there's no getting to the gate and then worrying about getting in. This goes without saying. Watching on the flat screen is great, but being there in person with FanExchange is so much better. Find the very best seats at the best prices at FanExchange.com. Use the promo code ROME, and you'll get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. FanExchange, we have tickets. Lee Jenkins joining us. Lee, one thing about the Schlitz Malt Liquor League, I mean, that sounds too good to be true. Like, it's completely made up. What were those games like, and who played in that league?
Yeah, I mean, you had teams like Jordan played for Playboy's team. So I was looking at the pictures, like front of the jersey says Schlitz Malt Liquor, and the back of the jersey says Playboy.
That's so
and
good.
He had Doc Rivers and Terry Cummings with him. And almost every team had one, at least one recognizable player. A lot of times a guy from Chicago, like Kevin Duckworth played for a team called Seduction by Rodney. Palinka's team was Luster Hair Care Products. So, and admission was free. So think about it. In 1988, summer of 88, you can walk into, I think it's Keating Hall, like Illinois Institute of Technology. You can walk in there for free on a Monday night and watch Michael Jordan play a game for nothing. For Playboy, representing Playboy.
Exactly. Lee Jenkins joining us. Best league ever. Best idea ever. Best league ever. All right, so if you're LeBron or you're Paul George or you're LeBron and Paul George, what are you seeing when you look at the LA Lakers? Is it a team that intrigues you as a possible free agency destination?
Yeah, that's the question, right? And it's a leap of faith, I think, for anybody to do that based on, you know, you got Ball and Ingram who are both 20 years old. And I think in a lot of cases, these players are going to have to trust sort of their own talent projections. Like when you look at these guys, do you see stars? Do you see sidekicks? Do you see players who at least, if nothing else, could be trade pieces? All you have to do is find one team with a star who is in love with Brandon Ingram, if you aren't. And I'm not saying that they're not. I think that they, as an organization, are really high on these guys. I mean, maybe they just say that to help pump up their value, but they feel as if they're on the right course. They're on kind of an Oklahoma City course, but they've also got this cap space and this lure of LA, and that's why what they're doing is a little different. It's like, you know, there's the OKC model where you build young. Obviously, that's like what Philly did. And then you have the Miami model where you go get the big free agents. They're kind of traveling both courses, not knowing necessarily which one is going to come through, but feeling like whichever one does will have them on a pretty good trajectory. And then they also talk freely about the Boston blueprint, where you accumulate all these assets and you are the team that is in position to make a deal for a disgruntled player, and like Kyrie did with the Celtics. And that's where, you know, it could be a guy like Kawhi, it could be someone else. You know, I'm sitting here in Houston, and it's like that's what happened with James Harden. It's not as though the Rockets were going after James Harden. James Harden was the player who became available, and they were in position to absorb him.
Lee Jenkins joining us. Lee, you mentioned Kawhi Leonard a couple of times. So where do you think that leaves him? Do you think that he's played his last game for the Spurs? What's going to happen in that case?
Yeah, I don't know. And that they are clearly the kind of team, the kind of coach who's capable of smoothing a fractured relationship. They did it with LaMarcus Aldridge. I can't imagine that they're just going to say goodbye to Kawhi Leonard this quickly, this easily. I mean, top five players don't come along, as good as their scouting department is, they don't come along that often. That's not a team that's going to just go, you know, have its pick of big-time free agents. But if it does reach that point, I think you have a lot of teams who are going to be swooping in and have positioned themselves the same way the Lakers have. It's not as though the Lakers are the only team that has the ability to swing a deal. I mean, Boston will be right there. There are a lot of teams that I think realize that this is important in today's NBA, is being dexterous enough to move when a disgruntled free agent or a disgruntled player shakes free.
Lee, one last thought about the Lakers. I mean, in Magic Johnson, you've got an icon, you've got a legend, you've got an enormous presence. But in reality, what does he bring to it? What kind of gravitas does he have? As an example, when he comes into a room with a potential free agent, what is his pitch and how strong a presence is he really?
I think it's pretty strong. And I don't, you know, I never know that, right? Like, you never know, does Riley, like when Riley was in there in 2010, like, did they go there because of Miami? Did they go there because of Wade, or was it really because Riley dumped the rings on the table? Like, just having that sort of, that kind of dramatic gesture, that person who is recognized, like, how significant really is that? But if it is, then clearly they have as big of an advantage as you can have in a free agent room. Like, Kuzma was telling me about the combine and how he'd go around every one of these rooms. You know, you're in a hotel and every team has a different room, and you go in there and he's talking to these GMs who are talking about his, you know, his per 40 stats and kind of digging deep into his, you know, analytic profile. And he gets in there with Magic and he's like, totally intimidated, you know, just sweating through his shirt. But he walks in, Magic smiles, suddenly he's totally at ease. And Kuzma described it like he's put his feet up on the coffee table and starts telling his whole life story to the Lakers. So, you know, when you have somebody who can both disarm and impress at the same time, I have to imagine in these free agent meetings that's important. I never thought, honestly, that these guys would make these huge life decisions based on a two-hour, three-hour free agent presentation. But it does happen. I do believe that Kevin Durant was swung in that meeting with the Warriors. So if it is that significant, then clearly it's not going to be a disadvantage to have Magic Johnson in the room for you.
All right, let's talk Packers now, and then we go to the phones. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports reports that Aaron Rodgers would like more input when the Packers are making major personnel decisions that happen to impact him. And according to Robinson, it's something that is weighing on him as he moves forward with his contract negotiations. Furthermore, two league sources tell Yahoo that Aaron Rodgers was both, quote, frustrated and emotional over a lack of communication from the front office prior to some significant decisions that were made without consulting him this offseason. So what we're talking about here is the team breaking off his quarterback coach, Alex Van Pelt, and kicking his favorite wide receiver, Jordy Nelson, to the curb. In terms of the report, I'm not sure whether or not that's accurate or not, although the reporter in question is extremely credible. But if I were Aaron Rodgers, and he hasn't addressed this directly, although he had kind of a sarcastic tweet. If I were Aaron Rodgers and the team did what it did without explaining to me, I'd be, quote, frustrated and emotional also. In fact, I'd be pissed. This guy's got every right to be. Don't think the teams don't consult with franchise players or Hall of Famers before they make certain moves, because they do. Just apparently not the Packers. And don't get it twisted. I'm not saying that this guy needs to be consulted on everything you do. Just keep him involved, especially as it relates to decisions that do impact him directly, namely his position coach, namely his favorite wide receiver. I guarantee Aaron Rodgers is not looking for you to consult with him on every single move. He's not looking for you to check with him before you make a decision on the D-line or the secondary or maybe a decision involving one of the linebackers. Although I am sure that given who he is and the fact that he destroys your defense every single day in practice and every other defense in the NFL for more than a decade, you'd be wise to pick his brain on those topics as well. And we're not talking about some knucklehead running off the mouth. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers, one of the best to ever do it, a brilliant guy. I mean, if I ran a football team, I think I'd want to chop it up with this guy as much as I could about all sorts of things. I know this. I'd sure as hell engage him as to why we were firing his longtime position coach and a guy he's very close to. I know I would engage him on what we were doing with his favorite wide receiver. Listen, on the one hand, you can benefit from this guy's knowledge. And then on the other hand, why would you want to aggravate him? He's your franchise quarterback. He's arguably the best player in franchise history. Why would you want to alienate that guy, and why wouldn't you take advantage of what he knows? I mean, it's one thing to agitate the old gunslinger, Brett Favre, back in the day. Favre was jerking the team around every single year, and they knew they had Aaron Rodgers ready to take his place. But they don't have that luxury right now. So keeping this guy in the loop, to me, is a win-win because you benefit from his knowledge and you don't want to aggravate, arguably, your best player ever. But not keeping this guy in the loop is a risk. But they're not. They obviously are not. And why aren't they? The same reason anybody refuses to do anything at all, because they don't have to. And the reason they don't have to is they've got him under contract for 2 more years. And then beyond that, they've got the ability to franchise him for 2 more years. They've got this guy under their control for 4 more years. So as good as he is, as important as he is, Aaron Rodgers really does not have much leverage here. They're the ones calling the shots, not him. And since he can't leverage them in any way, they don't feel the need to placate him on any level. Or even worse, rework a deal that he has outperformed and has him grossly underpaid at his position. Something else the team should address. No, they don't have to, but if I were the Packers, I would. Why? Because he's earned it, he has outperformed that contract, and he is underpaid right now, and he's far and away your best and most important player. You do right by these guys, even if you don't have to. And it says here, if they're not engaging this guy in major moves that impact him directly, and they're not willing to do something for him contractually, then they're not doing right by their Hall of Famer. So you've got the Patriot way, which reportedly has Tom Brady thinking about shutting it down and just going home, allegedly. And then you've got the Packer way, which might be creating problems and agitating Aaron Rodgers, allegedly. And no, Aaron Rodgers would never say any of this publicly, but just because he won't doesn't mean he's not thinking it. I know I'd be thinking that if I were him, but they obviously don't give a damn. That's why they're not engaging him, and that's why they're not talking about a contract with him, because they don't feel like they have to. To me, it's not that hard. It really is not that hard. If I'm the Packers, I engage the guy, I talk to the guy, and I pay the guy. To me, it really is not that hard. But the Packer way might be different than some of the other ways. Just know this, teams do talk to franchise players. Teams do consult with guys before they do certain things. And if anybody's earned that right, it's Aaron Rodgers. But he doesn't have the hammer, so they're not doing it. Packer fan, what do you think? 1-800-636-8686. So now I've laid this out now about the Patriots, and Tom Brady's not happy. The Packers and Aaron Rodgers allegedly is not happy. Depends on what you believe when you see that report. Let's go to the phones. All right, see, now this guy here, let's stay on topic instead. Why don't we go to Green Bay? John in Green Bay, you're first up. It's good to have you, John. How are you?
Good, Jim. How about you?
Good, bud. Good.
Hey, second time, long time. But I just have to mention first that you and I had a chance to meet about 20 years ago. You came into town for to do the show from Green Bay when the Packers played the Panthers in the NFC Championship game.
True.
And you went out to Fuzzy's. Do you remember this?
Oh, I do. Absolutely.
Yeah. You and I had a chance, actually, to meet you that night and talk to you for a few minutes, have a pop with you. And I'm sure you probably wouldn't remember it, but I just want to thank you for, you know, how gracious you were and just taking a few minutes to hang with us. It was great.
No, that was awesome. One of my favorite nights ever. I love that trip. That was my first time in Green Bay. I went to the NFC Championship game, my man, and I have never been in weather that cold. I was freezing.
Well, we just got 24 inches of snow this past weekend, so it's a crazy place.
Good
here,
luck.
But listen, I guess my take on this is somewhat in line with what you're talking about. First of all, it seems to me to be a huge leadership error when you've got a guy with a franchise, you know, you've got your franchise quarterback, his window is closing, and you don't bother to even have a conversation. I mean, nobody's saying that he's going to make your decision for you, but the fact that you didn't give him the courtesy of actually just hearing him out, to me, speaks to a larger issue that's existed here for a while just under the Mike McCarthy regime, which is there's a bit of a power struggle going on there. And this guy tends to be really, really stubborn. Now, I'm obviously just a casual fan with a great interest in the Packers, but when you hold on to your defensive coordinator as long as you have, when you stick with Brett Hundley as long as you have, there's just this sense that he's trying to make it known that he can make this thing work whether he's got Rodgers' input or not, and that Rodgers probably isn't the only reason he's been successful here. And to me, it's just a really poor decision not to take Rodgers' expertise and wisdom into this conversation at all. So I'll hang up and listen, Jim, and just thanks again for letting me have a chance to talk.
John, you got it. Great talking to you. Nice to get caught up. We're joined right now by boxer Mike Lee. Mike, it's great to have you on the program. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, Mr. Rome. How you doing, buddy?
Good, good. Mike, how about you? How are things?
I'm great. I'm in sunny California, enjoying training camp and just busting my ass, getting ready for June 8th.
I love it. Fight. I love it. My man, Mike Lee, joining us. All right, Mike, your story to me is amazing, but I want to set this up the right way. So can you go back to the beginning? When did you first start boxing, and what did you think of the sport when you first stepped between the ropes?
Yeah, I first started fighting at a young age, at about 8 years old. It was funny. I was actually playing a lot of other sports growing up, and I was going through a line shaking hands after a hockey game at about 8 years old, and this kid spit in my face, and I'll never forget. I just dropped the gloves and punched the kid in the face just because that's what I'd seen all my heroes do on TV. And I wasn't an aggressive, you know, violent kid, but when it came to sports, I was just so competitive and just had a different mindset. And after that, 2 days later, my father took me to a boxing gym, and I just fell in love with the sport. And I started sparring pros, you know, before I even had my driver's license. And then I ended up eventually going to University of Notre Dame, which is my dream school that I worked so hard to get into, and I fought there and then fought in the Golden Gloves, and was it was an amazing experience for me. And then right out of college, I got signed by Bob Arum and Top Rank, and everything just kind of took off, and I decided to forego my route in finance. I ended up graduating with a finance degree and decided to get punched in the face for a living, which my mom was really excited about.
Great. Light heavyweight boxer Mike Lee joining us. God, what a great answer that is, Mike. First of all, you said something at the very top that I think is great, because I've always said there's certain universal reasons to go. We know this, right? If somebody insults your race or your religion, you go. If somebody's a direct threat to you or your family, you go. If somebody spits in your face, you go. And that's how you were introduced to the sport. So I'm glad you backed me up on that. You told the story about Notre Dame. Now, the fact is you participated in Bengal bouts at Notre Dame, legendary amateur boxing competition. You were a three-time champion, but as you also point out, and anybody who knows your story, coming out of Notre Dame, you had a degree in finance, and you could have pursued a career on Wall Street, and it might have been easier than getting punched in the face for a living. Why did you pick boxing?
You know, I just fell in love with the sport at an early age, and while I was traveling all over the country and trying to finish up my finance degree, I knew this. I knew that I never wanted to live with the pain of regret. I knew that ultimately, no matter what happened, I've always said this, whether my next fight I break my hand and I never fight again, or I go on to win a world title and achieve my dream that I've had since a little boy, I want to go to bed at night knowing that I went for it. That one day when I'm on my deathbed at 100 years old, 120 years old maybe, that I can kind of sit back and say, you know what, I put all the chips in and I went for it. And I think that, you know, that ideology that tomorrow was promised to no one was just instilled in me at a young age. And, you know, I know it's a risky sport. I know people die in the ring, but it's a calculated risk, and it's a risk I'm willing to take that, you know, I get a chance here. I fought at Madison Square Garden, Cowboy Stadium, and very soon I'll get a chance to fight for a world title. And not many people get to say that. So, you know, screw it. I'm going to put all the chips in, and I'm going to go for it.
Mike Lee joining us. You push everything to the center of the table, and it's working out. I mean, as you point out, you fought in Vegas. You fought at Cowboy Stadium. You fought at Madison Square Garden, and you start to build a career for yourself, and you're getting endorsement deals with Subway. You're raising a lot of money for charity, and from the outside, everything looks great. But the truth is, and you wrote about this in the Players Tribune back in November, quote, "I wake up every single morning in pain." Every single morning, end quote. But it's not because of training, and it's not because of fighting. It's because of AS, an autoimmune disease. For those who don't know, Mike, what is AS, and how does it impact you?
Sure. So about 4 years ago, I was diagnosed with this autoimmune disease known as ankylosing spondylitis. And it essentially is just where your own body is attacking you, like many other autoimmune diseases. And it results in some days of chronic inflammation, chronic fatigue, I had everything between anxiety, depression. It was really 2 years in and out of hospitals in the prime of my career when I was about 26 years old that we couldn't figure out what was wrong. And it wasn't until we really got the proper diagnosis and dialed in on the right medication, the right diet, and most importantly, kind of the right mindset that I really started to begin to get progress and kind of get back in the ring. But, you know, I was really excited to write that piece for Players Tribune, and the outreach was incredible. I just got hundreds and hundreds of messages of people dealing with similar situations, whether it was an autoimmune condition or anything in life. But ultimately, I didn't want it to be a pity party. I'm extremely grateful and I'm blessed to be able to get back to doing what I do. The whole reason, the message I put that out there in the Players Tribune is to show that, listen, in life, you know, things are going to get in your way. And this was a major speed bump, a major hurdle, but I'm going to go out on my terms. And I'm going to dictate things on my terms. And no matter how much pain I'm in, whether it's a good day or a bad day, I'm going to keep pushing forward and keep, you know, chasing my dream of becoming a world champion. And if anything, I see this as a blessing in disguise. You know, it taught me so many things. If not anything, the biggest thing is gratitude. I didn't know what gratitude was until I got out of the hospitals. And it took me 2 years of going through all that pain to really feel extreme gratitude, and it just changed my life.
Mike Lee, my guest. Mike, finish that thought for me. How do you go through something that terrible? How does something that terrible make you so grateful? How?
I'll tell you, I tell this story often because it really resonates with not only me, but people that have gone through a similar experience where I remember I was laying in a hospital bed and was very private about all this, and really just friends and family knew about it. And I was maybe 14 days in, and I had IVs in me and drugs pumping in me, and we couldn't figure out why I was in this daily pain and daily headaches. And I looked outside, and I saw a couple kids playing outside. And I remember so clearly and so vividly in that moment thinking, when I get out of this, when I'm able to either jump back in the ring or even just run outside and enjoy being outside and jogging, I'm never going to take that for granted. And it's incredible how, you know, like the old saying is, you know, you never know you appreciate something till it's gone. And my physical wellness really was gone. I felt immortal up until that point. And so it was kind of those moments that stick with me every single day that I'm extremely grateful for every day. You know, I've already had a training session this morning, and yeah, I deal with some pain, but I'm grateful I got to do it. There's a lot of people that aren't in this situation and don't have the physical talent or the team around me that I have. So it's really given me a ton of gratitude.
Boxer Mike Lee chasing his dream still yet. Mike, one more last thought about this. I mean, it had to have been on some level, it had to have been a relief to find out exactly what it was, because for a while you were dealing with this every single day, like this crazy level of pain. And obviously as an athlete, you're a tough, tough minded person, but you've got this pain and nobody can diagnose it. What was it like to deal with this on a daily basis and not have any doctor be able to tell you exactly what it was? Because this is not an easy thing to diagnose, is it?
No, it's not. And it wasn't until, you know, we got this proper blood test where I had this HLA-B27 marker, and not to bore you details, but essentially it's very tough. And a lot of people that deal with autoimmune conditions end up going years and years. And I've heard of cases and people that have reached out to me and said it took them 5 years, 8 years, 10 years to properly diagnosed. And it's just one of those things where you go from doctor to doctor and you think you're going crazy, and until you really find out what it is, it becomes not only a physical burden, but a mental burden. And I think it, especially for guys and athletes, it becomes taboo to kind of talk about that. And I just saw Kevin Love come out with a piece in Players Tribune talking about, you know, getting over the stigma of, you know, talking about mental illnesses, whether it's depression or anxiety and things like that. And I'm glad that he did that, because a lot of people deal with those type of things. And I know during that time I was just afraid and embarrassed to talk about it until now. But I just want people to know that it's okay. It's natural. You go through those things, and it's not about what it's like while you're in it. It's about getting out of it.
And I would imagine, because you did that, Mike, you've probably heard from so many people who are so thankful that you shared that story, which is the whole point of why you wrote that and why you talk about it right now, which brings us to the last point. I mean, you fought in Vegas, as I mentioned, Madison Square Garden, Cowboy Stadium, and now in Chicago on June 8th. According to my guy, Paulie Malignaggi, if you win that fight, you're looking at the possibility of a mandatory challenge for number one. What do you think it's going to be like to step between the ropes in your hometown once again on June 8th?
well, I'm really excited. I've done it before. You know, I'm the kind of athlete, the more pressure, the better I perform. The better the opponent, the better I perform. So for this to be on national TV, Allstate Arena, at home, CBS Sports, June 8th, that's what I live for. I mean, that's what gets me up in the mornings and pushes through the pain. So I love it. I hope more people are watching. I hope there's more eyeballs, because there's a lot of people that didn't get to 10 and 0, let alone 20. And there's still people that believe that I won't fight for world, but I love it. And there's even days that I didn't believe it. So I'm ready to prove them wrong. I'm ready to prove myself wrong. And, you know, that's what you live for, those opportunities like that.
June 8th, Allstate Arena in Chicago, live on CBS Sports. One last thought, Michael, what you just said. You're one of those guys that the bigger the stage, the better you perform. You know, all great athletes are like that. I mean, can you explain what that is? You know, whether you call it clutch or something else, can you consciously dial it up in the biggest moments as an athlete?
Yeah, I think if anything, it comes down to your mindset in those moments. I like to do some visualization techniques where I'm constantly visualizing what that moment's like what it's going to smell like, what it's going to look like, what it's going to taste like with extreme clarity, because for me, your brain doesn't know the difference between perception and reality, and that's just been proven. So I go over it hundreds and hundreds of times in my head. I've been doing it since the moment I turned pro, and it really helps me. Once I get in the ring, I'm like, you know what? I've already been here a couple hundred times. Now it's just time for my body to perform what my mind has already done, and that technique has really, really helped me in and out of the ring.
The number 3 light heavyweight in the world, and that fight is June 8th, Allstate Arena in Chicago, and again, live on CBS Sports. My guest, Mike Lee. Mike, so great to have you on the show. What an amazing story that is. Listen, good luck. I'll be watching. A lot of us will be, and we'll do it again soon, I hope.
Thank you, Jim. I'm a big fan. I appreciate it.
You too, Mike. Let's talk some college football. New topic. The life of a college football player is pretty action-packed. We know this. 20 hours a week of practice. You have weight room, you have training table, you have study hours. You've got a hectic travel schedule. And that's before you even get to your classwork, your social calendar, and your burgeoning marijuana empire. Because if you believe what the Tallahassee Police Department believed, then DeAndre Francois was attempting to do more than just be the starting quarterback at Florida State. He was also attempting to become the Kron King of all of college football. I mean, the details of this story are wild. The Seminoles quarterback was the subject of a 2-month drug investigation that had Tallahassee PD going Jimmy McNulty on him. Search warrants, surveillance, combing through his trash, confidential informants. From the sounds of what the TPD thought, Francois didn't want to become the next Charlie Ward. He wanted to become the next Avon Barksdale or Stringer Bell. Because this was not college football. This was season 6 of The Wire. And if you ask the cops, Francois was rehabbing a major knee injury, majoring in social science, and minoring in Pablo Escobar. Now here's where this thing takes a turn for the worse. Here's where this gets lame. Because when the cops finally did bust through the doors, they couldn't find pounds of Kron and a college kingpin. They found roughly an ounce of tree, the same kind of drug paraphernalia that you'd find in any head's college house or apartment. And instead of bringing down the king of Kron in cuffs, they hit Francois with a $100 fine and a pre-trial diversion program. So how do you take that swing? How do you swing and miss that badly? How do you think that you're about to take down the head of the Florida State bong squad and end up rummaging through the garbage of a guy who might like to burn some blunts in his spare time while rehabbing a knee injury and listening to some Marley? Because that sounds and looks like a shakedown that you might want to have back. 2 months of rummaging through the garbage and working your leads only to find out that maybe a college kid smokes a spliff or two. Maybe. Look, I'll be straight. Hawk has probably burned 8 times that amount already today.
Burning.
Isn't that so, Adam Hawk? Listen, like anybody else, I was open to this being the greatest story ever. Dropping dimes on the gridiron and dropping dime bags all across campus. Tossing touchdowns on Saturday afternoons and tossing trees Saturday night. Big man on campus, neighborhood gangster off campus. regardless of whether the police got the wrong dude or Francois found a stash house before the 5-0 bum-rushed his place. This is not the kind of distraction that my man Willie Taggart is looking for in his first season at Florida State. But the new coach is going to stick with his quarterback, who missed most of spring ball as he's still recovering from that opening weekend injury against Alabama. Coach said, quote, "He is still with our football team. We talked about his responsibility as a student athlete here, and he understands my expectations and what I'm looking for, especially when it comes to our quarterback," end quote. Stealing crab legs is one thing. Running your own Kron empire is another. And while it looks like Francois was not spending his downtime dealing drugs to the greater Tallahassee area, the fact that the police even thought that was a possibility is pretty wild. And apparently they did not get what they were looking for. Man, nothing like running that surveillance, rummaging through all that trash, finally, and the adrenaline pumping, busting through the doors and finding what? Less than an ounce? 17 grams? Will Brinson joining us. What about Jimmy Graham? If Jimmy Graham has a huge year, does it all just go away? And then conversely, if Graham does not have a big year, does it become an even bigger issue?
100%. You know, if you take Jordy Nelson and you get rid of him, and as Jason Lockenford pointed out on the podcast with me this morning, let's say you bring in Odell Beckham instead of Jimmy Graham. Do you think that Aaron Rodgers is complaining publicly? Or is he like, hey, man, I really love what you guys have done from a personnel standpoint? Yeah, if Jimmy Graham catches 12 to 15 touchdowns and is a dynamic red zone threat and Davante Adams remains that outside weapon and the offense start, you know, really gets going and clicks in an MVP-style fashion for Aaron Rodgers, he's not going to be complaining come January of 2019. Now, if it's a sinking ship, if it's a disaster – and the offense isn't good, and Jimmy Graham struggles to really be an impact player, then I think you'll see him become a little more frustrated. And, Jim, I wouldn't be surprised at all, because we've seen this from the Packers out of the gate, maybe a slow start. It wouldn't be surprising to see some coded, vague messages from Rodgers if the Packers aren't an explosive offense in September.
Will Brinson, senior NFL writer for CBS Sports, joining us. You mentioned Odell Beckham. Will, what about Dez Bryant? Now, Dez Bryant says he does not want to play in Green Bay, but he would be very interested in playing with the Giants. What kind of a market do you think there will be for Dez Bryant?
It's going to be the opposite of what Dez thinks it is. He thinks he is... I mean, if you read that article on 247 Sports from Mike Fisher, you come away, not to rip Dez here, Jim, but you come away with a sense that the guy's a little bit delusional. He doesn't want to play for the Patriots because it wouldn't be special to win a Super Bowl with the Patriots. I mean, I don't know what to tell you, Dez, but if you want to win a Super Bowl, you should really consider the Packers or the Patriots, even though you once lost a playoff game in Green Bay. I mean, this is a situation where the Cowboys, because they waited so long to cut him, he is now facing a market that's going to be pretty restricted. There's not a ton of money out there. Teams have largely set their depth charts going into the draft. Teams are going to wait and probably see what they can get in the draft at a cheaper cost than Dez. And he's just not a number one anymore. So I would be really surprised if he comes out of this with a big contract or in a situation where he is the preeminent wide receiver on the team. I think Dez is going to probably have to swallow his pride, take a lesser role, take less money. And if it were me, I would take a lesser role and less money on a team like New England or a team like Green Bay.
And when he takes less money and a lesser role, trust me, he's not going to be happy about it no matter where it is, especially given who the guy is. Now, Will, we're about a week away from the NFL draft, a little bit more than that. So anything you hear right now, you got to take with a grain of salt. I mean, take, for instance, the case of Josh Rosen. You know, there's so many different reports about this guy. Reports that he's too smart, he's got too many interests outside of football, that Miami is, quote, obsessed with this guy. Ultimately, what is your sense of what those think at the top of the draft about Rosen? Are there genuine concerns that he has all these issues or a team's trying to deflate his value, hoping that he will fall? What do you think happens with him?
I think ultimately he goes in the top six pick. I can't see a situation where any of the big four quarterbacks fall that far, because unless Cleveland, if we get quarterbacks to go 1-3 or 1-2-3, Cleveland is going to be in a power pole position at four. And I would be stunned if they can stay there instead of taking the bounty of picks they get in return. And then I think you're going to see a similar setup for maybe the Broncos and maybe the Colts at 5-6, depending on how things play out. I just think teams are going to trade up for those quarterbacks if they fall. And I don't believe for a second that when these teams ultimately watch film and look at Josh Rosen and see what he can do as a pocket passer who can make an impact in 2018 and beyond, certainly, I don't think that any of that millennial stuff, any of that inquisitive stuff is going to be a problem. I mean, look, this is what Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady are doing now. And I get that they weren't doing it necessarily coming into the league, but Josh Rosen is just a dude who wants to know why. That's a good thing from a coachability standpoint if you find the right fit. Now, maybe Cleveland's not the right fit. Maybe the Jets aren't the right fit. We'll find out. I just don't see him dropping because quarterback is too important in this league and too many teams are too desperate right now. Jim, I think you could make a case half of the league, half of the teams in the first half could potentially draft a quarterback just because of veteran situation, whether it is the Chargers, the Patriots, you know, the Cardinals, the Ravens, I mean, the Steelers, all of these teams are going to be interested. It's going to be a pure economic play here that's going to get them drafted high.
It seems to me, Will, there's a lot of reasons. Maybe you might not like Josh Rosen. Maybe you've got concerns about his durability. Maybe there are other questions. But the fact that maybe he is inquisitive or is too smart, that's like the worst reason imaginable. What? Me, I'm not going to take the dumb quarterback. I'm going to take a smart quarterback. Last thought, Will. You have never been afraid to tackle the tough issues of the day, both in the NFL and outside of it. So let me hit you with this. Grocery shopping with headphones. Is that okay? And if it is okay, is that a blanket approval for such a move? Or are there some warnings and conditions that come along with it?
It is okay, but there are absolutely warnings, Jim. Look, you can, in a major metropolitan area, grocery shop away with your headphones, but you got to be prepared to deal with the consequences of not staying within the mustard and the mayonnaise. I mean, if you're out here banging into old ladies with a shopping cart because you're listening to the Jim Rome podcast or the Pick Six podcast, then you got to have your privileges revoked. I mean, that's just the bottom line, and you got to be a little careful too. If you're in a small town, you can't go offending the mayor or maybe your banker when you're breezing by them through the salad dressing aisle trying to jam out to some something on Spotify.
Rex in the ABQ. Hey, Rex, what's up?
Not much, Jim. But apparently Brick in Ruffalo thinks I call too much. Ricky, Booby, I do that on purpose so you can't get through, you oxygen thief. It's my version of a zone blocking scheme. And were you really bragging about taking a vacation to Florida? I know you saved years for that trip, Ricker, but a couple things your travel agent at AAA should have told you. Number one, Florida is a flat, humid dump with mosquitoes the size of helicopters. Two, there's nothing exclusive about Sarasota. Three, Southwest Airlines does not have first class service. You just got lucky and got a Group A boarding pass. Rick, do yourself a favor. Don't call the jungle again until you get your cholesterol level to somewhere between 400 and hollandaise sauce. We want you to keep calling, but not if you're in and out of the hospital getting a pericardiocentesis. And regarding your constipation issues, as someone who gets stopped up from time to time, I recommend the Molten Lava Cake at Morton's.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
You know, Rex, you may have been run, but you're welcome to call as much as you want. Hey, Rick, you really ought to do something about that cholesterol. Apparently, you don't have that good cholesterol, the good fat, somewhere between 400 and hollandaise sauce. Benny, what's up? How are you?
I'm doing well. Hopefully, the Bucks can turn this around once they get back home. I learned from listening to your radio show that this Giannis guy has really long arms. But I wanted a quick hit on the Rodgers situation. Despite how unhappy he is rumored to be seemingly every offseason, bar an injury, he puts them in a position to do a postseason damage. Because you can throw any group of human beings in pads in front of Rodgers, and he'll throw seeds to them and be successful. So to anyone who's silly enough to believe that they don't consider the thoughts and feelings of the best player in the NFL, or believe that the Packers front office is dumb enough to do anything that would push this franchise's recent existence away, you need to do what Caleb does after consuming too much cheese and relax. Speaking of Caleb, since he called and tore apart Adam Hawk's non-existent dye job the other day, does that mean that it's open season on whatever the hell I want? Like, I can just make stuff up and go in on it? Because I've been itching to run smack on Alvey's deep, confident radio voice, Hawk's trustworthy and existent backbone, Keith Arnold's always professional composure and complete lack of a goofy smile during every occasion, and Austin Huff's personality. And to the champ, for only a couple more months left, although you did a pretty good job of listing off Caleb's shortcomings the other day, you forgot a couple minor details, like the fact that he once tried to eat a Rolex Oyster Perpetual, or that he keeps a 64-ounce jar of strawberry preserves in his glove box that he calls traffic jam for when he's on the road and needs a snack. And also, Lef, your brand seems to be responding to callers the same day, so I'm going to put you on the clock, and I'd like you to finish this joke for me. What do Miami Hampers and fake gangster callers from Indy have in common? I look forward to your response, idiot. Out.
Let's go. I'll say it again. It's smack off season. It's bringing everybody out. The champ, the two-time defending champ. He's doing it. He's going back to back to back. Third day in a row. I don't know why he's calling. I don't really care. Lef in Laguna. What's up, champ champ?
What's up, Romy? How you doing?
Good, bud. How about you?
Pretty good. Hey, man, like Celebrity Death, you better get used to things coming in threes this year. Three calls in 3 days. A third Smackoff title in 3 years. And speaking of, I don't care where and when the Smackoff is. You could hold that thing yesterday and I'll show up and win it. But back to things of three, Romy. You check out Ice Cube's Big Three League. They just had the draft last week with the likes of Birdman, Bonzi Wells, and Kwame Brown. Now, I'm not saying that nobody wanted to be drafted to this league, but I assume that this thing had more draft dodgers than Vietnam. I mean, ex-NBA players are fleeing to Canada at record pace, others claiming heel spurs and flat feet. I don't see why, though. I mean, the league sounds totally money. They play shirts and skins. The courts are illuminated by the players' cars' headlights. The PA announcer is using a rolled-up newspaper to yell through. There's automatic timeouts every time the ball rolls into the street. And instead of a banner, Romy, the champions get to hang a pair of sneakers over the power lines. I mean, are you kidding me with this, Jimmy? And Cube wants to expand this league? Wait, from what, half court to full court? Anyways, Jimmy, last day I wanted to answer Benny's little riddle from earlier. What do Miami Hampers and fake gangster callers from Indy have in common? I don't know the answer to that, but I do know what Benny and Wisco and Cheese have in common. They both stink worse than a Dane Cook butt biscuit. I'll three you later, Jimmy.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Hey, Lef, let's just not go for four. Let's not go back to back to back to back.
Good night now!